Hey everybody, I'm back. It's been a while, hasn't it? Welcome to Beyond the Matrix, the program that dares you, invites you, implores you to think outside the box of convention. And that is what we try to do. I think we do very admirably, in fact, every week, bringing you some people who are really forward thinking as to the direction that we're headed. And certainly my guest today is no exception. But before I bring him on, I just want to catch you up with a few bits and pieces. For those of you who have been waiting to hear about Egypt, wowee, it was a journey of incredible initiation. It was challenging. It's getting more and more challenging as the time goes on, and I'm sure we'll be bringing that up today in our conversation. And it kind of threw me for a loop. I've been quite sick with pneumonia, as a matter of fact. That's why I've been gone. But I'm back in full power and rocking and rolling. So we will talk about Egypt today because there's a lot to talk about, as usual, among other things. And I also wanted to tell you that the journey to the crop circles and mystical England has one place only left. So if you're interested in being in that trip, you need to make that your priority. It's first come, first serve for that spot. The dates and all the information are available on my website at SyrianRevelations.net. Okay, that's enough for the announcements. I'll get some more to you later. I can't wait to bring on my, you know, you've got these kindred spirits in life, and you see people doing walking paths that are so similar to yours, and universe puts us together, and it's just exciting. And that's how it's been with William Henry, who invited me to be on his show recently. It was wonderful, but it just seemed like not enough time, so I begged him to come on my show. So here he is today, author, investigative mythologist, William Henry, really a kindred spirit. We're going to talk about ascension. We're going to talk about the Norway spiral, finally someone who sees it as I do, or at least in the same positive light, and many other exciting things. Hello, William.
Thank you so much for having me on your program.
Thank you for coming on and being patient with me. You were supposed to be here last week, but I was just coughing and raising up a storm, and I knew it would be turmoil to try to do a show.
Yeah. the Egyptian attunement. You did it. Congratulations.
Oh, boy. I'm finding, you know, I like you, I bring groups to Egypt once or twice a year, and the initiations are getting stronger, and the obstruction is becoming much more evident and more difficult. And even for us, the teachers or the spiritual leaders that are bringing people in, the challenges, the initiations are becoming immense. Would you agree with that?
Oh, I would, absolutely. I kind of, like you, I'm sure you switch roles. You go from, kind of being like the tip of the arrow going into the temples, leading everybody in, kind of being at the front wave of first wave of the energy as you enter. And then you try to go back to the still place where now you're in the center and everybody is just kind of circulating around you, and you're just trying to be there to keep everybody's wheels going and make sure everybody's getting that experience. And so, yeah, it's a juggling act in a way, and especially with a large group like you took, that is really admirable.
Patricia. Yeah, I had 70 people. I would never do that again. They were wonderful people, and the power of that union and all that light was immense.
Yeah.
But it was quite an undertaking.
Yeah. Well, the energy is definitely there in Egypt right now, and it's increasing. I mean, I was there in January with a group, and we had probably a half a dozen of us that quantifiably regenerated throughout the course of the trip, just kept getting stronger and stronger. It carried on until we got home, and people are flying now as a result getting that energy. And so I know you will be shortly, too, and that's the bounce. That's the gift of Egypt that keeps on giving, ultimately.
That's a nice way to put it. I'm sorry. I did have noticeable interference from the guards, from the people that do not want light workers in those temples.
Yes.
And, in fact, I did a radio show the other day with Stephen Mailer. We talked about that on the air, how the powers that be there are trying to keep light workers out. And I was wondering, have you experienced that too when you were there?
No, not no direct kind of challenges in that way. But what I have noticed, and it's kind of under the radar, I guess, is the way they're really doing it, or one way that they're approaching this is to build these wonderful visitor centers, and now they're going to take you in here, and you can have a cup of coffee. And, oh, look, why don't you just watch the video of the temple over here? You don't really need to go in it anymore. We'll just build this nice little place here, and you'll sit down, sit, have a nice cup of coffee, and watch the temple instead of experience it as you're meant to.
That's right.
And so you're starting to see that. They're turning it into Disneyland in that way. And in a way, that's good, but in a way, it's also saying, well, wait a minute, what's the ultimate objective here? Is it, in fact, to keep us out of the temple? Because it sure feels that way.
Yes, well, the term Disneyland is exactly what I was using while I was there. And we've got, you know, neon lights and all these little snack shops and
right.
all this diversion, like you said, and deliberate breaking the energy.
Yeah.
You can feel it as a psychic when you're approaching the temple. Each time there is more and more obstruction. The
right.
candy shop, the Coca-Cola stand.
Distraction.
And it's not just the distraction, but it's actual physical disruption of the energy
yeah.
lines of the temple.
Right. And
so
again,
I think
subtle,
that it's all
it's...
the more important for people who are interested in getting to Egypt to go now. And I
go
always...
now. Absolutely.
Go now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I feel very strongly about that, and not only in Egypt. I think that I have talked about this many, many times all over the world. There is a noticeable shutting down of access to the temple.
Mm-hmm.
So my idea is, well, damn them if they can't take a joke. We're going. And that's why I brought 70 people this time, and I will continue. At one point, I thought I might be slowing down on that, but I don't think so. We've got work to do in those temples.
Yeah, when ISIS calls, you answer, right?
That's right, to say. Listen, before we get on into so many fascinating subjects, you know, you're quite a person. I mean, 15 books later,
mm-hmm.
you've got so much out there. Can you give the listener a quick, which is not easy for you, I'm sure, resume of what you're up to, what your background is and what you're up to?
Sure. I call myself an investigative mythologist. It's sort of like being an investigative journalist, except I'm in myths and sacred traditions trying to figure out what are these stories really all about? What are these legends? And the primary legend that I focus on is, which isn't a legend, it's the recollection, the lore concerning the gate to heaven. Every single tradition has stories of these gateways that lead into heavenly realms, other star systems, with beings coming and going. Usually these beings are much more advanced than we are. In fact, they're often thought of as light beings. They're in an ephemeral form or a light body form, but they also can toggle back and forth between their light body and their earth suit. So I became very intrigued by those legends, and just exactly where are these gates to the stars, these stargates, and what happens when you go to these places? Why does it seem to transform us, and how can we accelerate this process of transformation whereby we are able to access, not only access these gates, but perhaps even use them for their ultimate sacred purpose, which is to explore and experience union with the divine. And so that's primarily what my books are about. All of them are about the transformation, all about gateways, and following these guys around that have been doing this and are telling us again and again that we have the capacity to do it as well.
And I'm sure you'll agree there are a few of these gateways in Egypt.
Absolutely. I mean, where do we begin? The great
transfiguration. You bring groups every year as well, or was January the exception?
Pardon me?
To Egypt. Do you bring groups every year as well?
Yes, I do. Yes, I've been going every January and sometimes in the spring as well, but you can pretty much set your calendar. I'll be there in January taking a group and just love going that time.
Well,
of
that's
group.
Interesting because this January I might be doing another group, so perhaps we can link up and do some shared time together. That would be fun.
That would be a blast. Absolutely, Patricia. Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about that when we're off the air.
Okay.
But while we're on the air, people that are interested in that, either through William or me, give a buzz and let's see. We might very well do something like a couple of days together and then we sprout out on our own journeys.
Yeah, we could have a little mini conference or something. Yeah, that would be
exactly.
That would be lovely. That would really enjoy
Yeah, it
that.
Would be great. Well, okay, you have some very exciting information about the Isis-Osiris device that I'd love to see if you could share with us. It's kind of complex, but it's very, I don't want to say unique to you, but I have never heard anyone else speak about it. Can you give us some information about that?
Thank you for asking. I've done my best to try to get other researchers interested in what I think is the ultimate ancient technology. It's a, I call it it's a Stargate device. It's a teleportation machine that is portrayed on the walls, especially at the Temple of Abydos in Upper Egypt. The Abydos is called the place of the head or the place of the skull, just sort of like Golgotha where Jesus was crucified. Only what happened here is that about the time of Moses, a king named Seti was building his temple, and however it happened, whether it was through a transmission perhaps from directly from Osiris or a hunch or whatever, as he's constructing his temple, he suddenly discovers this vastly ancient tomb or temple that today we refer to as the Osirion. It's generally regarded by maverick archaeologists as being at least 10,000 years old, probably an Atlantean temple. Its ultimate purpose, no one's exactly sure. But what I think Seti discovered there is the head of Osiris. And I'll talk about what that head is in just a moment. And the reason I think he discovered it is because on the exterior wall of his temple, he has a scene in which he shows this head of Osiris. And then when you go inside his temple, he has a chapel dedicated to Osiris, who, of course, was the ancient Egyptian god of rebirth and regeneration, resurrection. The whole idea was to regenerate ourselves and become like Osiris as a resurrected being. So when you go inside the Temple of Seti in the Osiris chapel, on one wall is a depiction of Osiris. And this portrayal of him looks like an antenna, which is what the head of Osiris resembles. And this head of Osiris, this antenna, is attached to a platform that is easily identified as the biblical Ark of the Covenant, or what we think of as the biblical Ark of the Covenant. And what it's showing is this kit that is put together. In the hieroglyph of Osiris, you have these two pillars called Tet pillars, or power pillars. You have a portal symbol in between those Tet pillars, which actually signifies the Ark of the Covenant. And then you have the head of Osiris, which is an antenna-like looking device with a serpent levitating in it. Think of the tree of knowledge of the Garden of Eden, the serpent of wisdom. And when you assemble this kit, it forms what I call the Osiris device. And I use the word device because when you look that up in the dictionary, it says something about a tool, an appliance, a technology, or a symbol. And the Osiris device, as you see it in the Osiris chapel, is all of those things. It's a tool, it's an appliance, it's a technology, and a symbol. And when you ask the question, well, what did this tool do? The Egyptians answer that by saying they called it the Osiris Tower and referred to it as the ladder or stairway to heaven. And so this is what I'm thinking Seti dug up in the tomb of Osiris behind his temple. He enshrines it in the Osiris chapel, and not only does he enshrine it, but he shows himself transformed into this pillar. And this is where I get the idea that what this thing is, it's a stairway to heaven, yes, but it's also a teleportation machine, because as you follow the cartoon, the story that's on the walls, it's showing Seti's dematerialization, just like Osiris, who was cut to pieces and then reassembled at another location. In other words, he dematerialized and rematerialized. It shows Seti in the act of dematerializing and rematerializing in another realm, which the Egyptians called the dimension or field of the blessed. And so this, in a just a general overview, is what is on the walls there. And again, let's get some people interested in what this technology actually is.
Well, that's really very fascinating, because in my book, Where Pharaohs Dwell, I describe... like you, I described the Temple of Abydos and the Osirion as being the house of the skull, or of the head, or of the skull, and describe it as very possibly being, now this is out there, but why not, the 13th crystal skull, or the master skull of the Skull Committee of Skulls, supposedly from Atlantis, and how it is being very possibly protected there in the true Ark of the Covenant.
Well, why not, Patricia? I mean, so next to the Osiris
Chapel.
Well,
it certainly resonates with what you're saying.
Yes, absolutely. Next to the Osiris Chapel is another room, a long room that has these various portrayals of Seti erecting the Tet or Jed pillar. And in one scene, you have Isis standing right beside it. And again, this thing resembles an antenna. It's phallic looking as well. And in this instance, you've got Isis standing beside it with the head of God talking from within this antenna, or let's just call it a speaker. And this, in this instance, the head actually belongs to Hathor, which is very interesting. But it just goes to this mm-hmm. idea that this is the place of the talking head. This is the place where the head of God, where the secrets of God are disclosed, because it's God that tells those secrets right from his or her lips. And so I can completely concur with you that that is what's going on here, and that it does have that definite Atlantean connection if the dating on the Osirian is correct. And I think it is. In fact, I think it might be much older than 12,000 years old.
I think it is, too. In fact, Hakim, who I'm sure you've heard named...
Yes, absolutely.
...said that the Osirian was 50,000 years old,
there
according to the Canisians.
There you go. And so...
And he links it to the temple of the Sphinx.
Okay.
The Sphinx and yep. the Osirian all being 50,000 years old. And that really makes much more sense, because anyone who's been near the Osirian understands that it's a complete U-part archaeologically.
Absolutely. And so is the Osiris device, which is the sacred tree. It's the tree of life. It's all of those technologies. And now, Abydos isn't the only place where you find this. It's duplicated at Dendera. You'll see it occasionally on sarcophagi. So there are other instances where this device is portrayed. I tried to collect all the various depictions of it because, one, it's so fascinating, but two, it's really the symbol of the ultimate teaching. And I think it's important that we acknowledge that there's a reason why now is the time when we're gaining awareness of it. I mean, the Jed pillar is, as I mentioned, it's the world tree, but it represents stability and uprightness and regeneration. And they would actually have these festivals that date back to the first dynasty in Egypt, 3100 BC, concurrent with the beginning of the Mayan calendar, where they would erect the Jed pillar in sacred ceremonies, and it symbolized our stability and our regeneration. And what I've done in presentations, and I might even have it on my website, I'm not sure, is to compare the Egyptian images of the raising of the Jed, the Osiris pillar, with the Mayan depictions of the sacred tree, which they expressed was a symbol of our alignment with the center of the galaxy, especially in 2012. And the message that I take out of all of this is that it's time for us to become Jed, to become stable, to become righteous people, to become like the Jedi, and use the Force properly in order to help our planet navigate through this very turbulent time that we're entering into right now.
And we're entering, or shall we say, already well into.
Yeah, how about well into it? Yeah, I was being generous. <'Cause
there's more laughs> I've been over here in Europe, and we've got this cloud of...
Right.
Are you well aware of the volcano that's
I am acutely aware of it, because I'm attempting to fly to London on April 27th, and I've got my fingers crossed.
Wow. That's right, because we're going to go out to lunch here in Rome,
that's right.
I remember.
Yes.
Well, I got news for you. You keep your eyes really peeled on that, because April 27th gives you how many days?
About 10 days.
Phew. Well, I'll tell you, it's pretty interesting to see this. We've got earthquakes everywhere. We've got every kind of natural shift going on. But this is very particular, because an entire continent of activity is shut down. There's not a plane flying. There are, I think, limited flights in places in Europe that can still avoid this cloud. But nonetheless, this cloud is blocking European air traffic completely. And it's like, okay, sometimes we forget how Mother Nature can completely turn the tables on human activity.
That's right.
And I'm watching this going on, looking at this cloud, because we're seeing pictures of the jet stream and how it's traveling. And I think it's really fascinating how people are becoming acutely aware. I hate to say how vulnerable we are, but how utterly detached we are sometimes from nature.
Well,
and when Mama says, you're not flying, you're not flying.
Right. And that's something I talk about in my Ascension presentations, because we take things for granted. We forget how precious each moment really is. And
I'll hold to that.
And there is no guarantee that we will have a tomorrow. We only have today. We only have this moment. Right now is all we are promised. And if that isn't your mindset, then I would highly encourage you to start just maximizing every possible moment, every breath.
I think that's so important. I just had this discussion with my brother, who's kind of a conservative guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying, you know, as soon as we get things a little bit settled down with the girls, and I said, brother, there is no as soon as. It's
right.
Now.
Right. It's now.
Make every minute count. It's not out of fear, and it's not out of premonition of anything dark. It's just, look, the big lesson we've got right now is, this is it. Make it count.
That's right. Yeah, and it's
anything can happen in any moment. Make sure when your baby blues are closed for the last time as you journey to the next destination, that you're looking back at a rich life of experience with laughter and joy.
Yeah.
Instead of thinking, if I had only.
Exactly. That is exactly it. I've been doing a lot of research on the near-death experience lately, and that's the message that comes through every time I get into that research and look at it, is that use every moment you can now, because when you have that past life review, you don't want to have any regrets. You want to have it as joyful and full of laughter and full of love as you possibly can make it.
That's my message, too. We're so synchronistic on that. I just, even if it's the last note of that passage where the book of your life goes in front of your eyes, let it be a tinkle. Let it be a sparkle of light.
Yeah.
And nothing being pushed into some nebulous future time that you're going to get to. This is it, and this is what we're being shown.
Yeah.
Even this cloud, is. I think it's very symbolic and it's very powerful. And being that we're here, you know, in Europe, I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Pay attention to this, yeah?
Well, and what's with Europe this year, 2010? It's like, watch the skies, the Norway spiral, now the cloud. It's like, it's like everybody's looking up in the skies in Europe for some reason right now.
Well, we're supposed to be looking, I think. What about, I do want to talk about the spiral, and did you see the tetrahedron that was floating over Moscow the same day as the Norway spiral?
I did see that, yeah, that black triangle or tetrahedron, exactly.
It was a tetrahedron. A tetrahedron is very important to the work that I do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was being described as a pyramid, and I was looking at it. I'm like, that's a tetrahedron. Woo! So people have poo-pooed it as being a photo op, just as they have done the same about the Norway spiral. But I think we're getting some very important messages in the sky, and it's time to start really paying attention to what's going on around us. And that's one of the reasons why we've got this plume of volcanic ash floating over Europe, because it is showing us, every news station is showing us about the jet stream. Have you been seeing this in the States?
No, I have not. I don't watch that.
Well, what they keep showing is the jet stream is shifting in the eastern southern direction. And it's like the jet stream is one of the most important things that's happening on this planet as far as the shift in Earth's energies. And nobody even knows what it is. Very few people even know what the jet stream is. So here it is being blasted into everyone's consciousness because the jet stream is changing and it's weakening, right?
Right.
And so here we have this plume of smoke, and all we're seeing on the weather news is information about how the jet stream moves. And I think it's very interesting.
Yes.
I think there's a reason for that.
Yes. So
let's talk about the Norway spiral.
Okay.
Anyone who's been listening to my show, no doubt knows well about it because I've spoken about it a number of times. And there are a lot of people out there like Hoagland and David Wilcox who are convinced it's a harp, I can't think of the word that Hoagland uses, but definitely not a good thing. And I think that you resonate with me about this, which is I find this to be a very exciting event in the sky. How about you?
Oh, I was to say I was blown away would just be an understatement. And I guess everybody has to look at it from their own personal perspective. And in a way, I sort of predicted that spiral, and that's what made it all the more like just mind blowing for me. What happened was I had been in Tempe, Arizona, lecturing with David Wilcock and Richard Hoagland and Dr. Stephen Greer, and as you indicated, they have a little different mindset on it, and you get a conspiratorial bug when you're around them. And I came home from that event with that mindset, and somehow I. And by the way, my presentation at that conference was about the dome of the U.S. Capitol, this painting called The Apotheosis of George Washington, which shows him being deified or transformed in the process of ascension. And so that's important to this story, because what happens is I come home from that event in the kind of conspiracy mindset, and all of a sudden I find this YouTube video that had gone viral. It was a guy named Lord Christopher Monckton, and he had warned back in October of 2009 that the Stockholm conference, in his opinion, was just a sham for the one world government. And what he said was, and this is what caught my attention, he said, the apotheosis is at hand. World government is here. And I hear that, I'm saying, well, wait a minute, that's a really bizarre use of the word apotheosis. I'm an expert on that word. Well, I've spent over a year and a half researching it, and I know that's not a real right use of that word. And so,
it didn't sound like it to me either.
No, so I'm thinking, what's he doing? Is he like running up a flag for those in the know, saying warning, warning, danger, or what? Or what's going on here? And so I follow it up, and I'm thinking, well, okay, if he is saying the apotheosis, the ascension, the rapture, the transfiguration is at hand, then and the world government is here, then where is the fast talking Antichrist that runs it and us into the ground? Should we start looking for that guy? And if so, then we need to start looking for the two witnesses, the returning Moses and Elijah type figures that are portrayed at the transfiguration of Jesus standing on either side of a gateway. And in this transfiguration art, when Jesus turns into light, which is what transfiguration means, he is shown in front of an open gateway of concentric rings, usually, that are often blue. And so what I concluded this article by saying was, should we start looking in the skies, perhaps around this Copenhagen event, for a mystic blue spiral with a messianic being popping out of it? 9 days later, over the Copenhagen conference, what happens? You have this mystic blue spiral, the Norway spiral, open up, and the world press announces that a stargate or a wormhole opened over Norway.
Hold on a minute. Now, you announced that. Should we be looking for this at the event?
Yes. I wrote an article called...
That's a pretty nice prophecy you got going there, my man.
Thank you. There's an article on my website.
I'm impressed.
Thank you. Yeah, my website, williamhenry.net, is an article called Warning, the Apotheosis is at Hand. And I lay everything I just said, I lay out in that article. And then 9 days after I published that article, here comes the Norway spiral. And it's like, whoa, what is going on here? Is this Project Bluebeam, as some speculated, which is supposed to be some black project about the introduction or the arrival of a messianic being? And what was the role of President Obama going to Copenhagen, to Oslo to pick up the Nobel Peace Prize during the same time frame? And why was Will Smith there with them? I mean, Will Smith carries a lot of baggage, and it's like, it's really strange that Will Smith was the first person to talk with Obama after he gets the Peace Prize, while we've got this spinning blue thing going on in the sky and everybody around the world going, what in the heck is going on?
So what do you think is going on?
Well, I think that it was kind of a... I can't say for sure that it was that anything came out of that spiral. However, when you compare, as I did on my website in a follow-up article, the images of Jesus' transfiguration and Jesus as a blue being beaming energy, and you put that side by side with the Norway spiral, it sure looks to me like somebody was either trying to use this messianic symbolism, or we did get a beam coming perhaps maybe from the center of the Milky Way galaxy, because the Mayans had said that during this time we want to look for the center of the galaxy opening, a serpent rope emerging, and from out of the serpent rope will be traveling their messianic being, who they call Quetzalcoatl, or the feathered serpent. So when you look at the Norway spiral, you have this coiling blue beam that could be interpreted as the serpent rope coming out of this white spiral. And I think the only thing I can say for sure about that event is that according to the global consciousness at that time, it is considered possible for a wormhole to open. Now, that to me is kind of the one of the main things I took out of that event, is that if you're doing a reality check with a civilization, in other words, could these people handle a Stargate traveling, time traveling messiah? The answer would be yes, because in this instance, people agreed, oh yeah, okay, a wormhole opened over Norway. Now, what's for breakfast? You know, we went back to our normal everyday life, you know? And so that's what I took out of it. And I think that it could in fact be a test case, a setup for a future event where we see this coming again sometime in the next couple of years.
Maybe not even that long. I agree with you that I always laugh and tell people that Jesus Christ could walk right into the middle of the mall, and he'd be dragged away and taken to some clean hold center as being a nutcase or a hugger.
I always liked what Mark Knopfler wrote in his Dire Straits song. If Jesus Christ were alive today, he'd be gunned down dead by the CIA.
Exactly.
No, excuse me. That was another band. That was The, I think it was. Not Dire Straits. It was Mark Knopfler's. Mark Knopfler's was Two Men Think They're Jesus. One of them must be wrong.
Well, it's true, though. I mean, really, the way that people are so completely tuned out and anesthetized and programmed to believe what they're shown and shown to, what am I trying to say here? Manipulated by what they're shown with an estimate of how the mass is going to react, it's very clear that events of this nature can be completely ignored. I mean, most people never heard about the Norway spiral.
You're right. You're right.
But and that is, to me, the most mind-blowing thing possible, because when I saw this spiral, I was laid out for weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
And talking to people, they were... What are you talking about? And I never, that was the few people that I did talk to, even in our circles of, let's say, enlightened people, not that many people were aware of it.
Or they just dismissed it. They bought the Russian missile theory and just
went on.
And that is kind of the big question. Why is that, Patricia? I mean, is it maybe this awakening event, if you want to call it that, this messianic event, is just not for very many people at all. You think it's going to be suddenly a planetary awakening where everybody's going to get it instantly. I mean, that's kind of part of the prophecy, is the arrival of a new lighter vibration that enlightens every man. That's what the book of Isaiah says anyway, but maybe it's not going to enlighten every man to the extent that we think.
No, it's not looking like that. In fact, I wasn't as precise as you with my prophecies about that, but I've been telling people that The crop circles are harbingers of the next step. The next step is circles and spirals in the sky.
Yeah.
And that we're getting very few people ever get into a crop circle. And that is something that befuddles me completely, because I think that these are very, very important events on this planet.
Wow.
And that the next stage is spirals in the sky. And I mean, this spirals, light circles, the sky is the palette, the artist's palette, creator's palette. Anything can be happening up there, and surely the Norway spiral was proof of that. And so the fact that people could look at that and not just be gobsmacked completely, I find hard to believe.
Yeah. Well, and then the other part of it, and this is part of, this is why I do what I do, and this is the service I feel I provide to people, is that in a lot of the ancient stories about ascension, for example, Enoch was an ordinary guy who lived in a pre-flood civilization, probably Atlantis, who spent his life like you and I do, Patricia, many of the listeners. We're deeply interested in this legend and lore. We're interested in stargates, wormholes, stairway to heaven, the whole process of ascension. And part of the reason why we're so interested in it and the reason we devote our lives to it is because in the ancient world, the promise was that one day, if you got enough knowledge, you would get an interview with a higher being. And it's sort of like applying for a job. If you don't know, have the background to do the job, you're never going to apply for it to begin with, or you're going to seek people out that could get you that job. And the job that we all want is kind of the one that Enoch got once he ascended into the heavenly realms. He became a janitor. He started sweeping up around the throne of God. Whoop-de-doo. Well, whoop-de-doo, he's sweeping up around the throne of God. You know, that's part of what all this earth training is about, is to get to that realm. One of the jobs that we apply for is janitor, sweeping up around the throne of God, tending the throne of God.
I'm sure that you and I would be glad to take that job.
We would take that tomorrow. Right, and that's why we spend our lives doing this research. But a lot of people don't want that job, so they're not even interested in this. And that's kind of the way I look at it. So what I try to do for people is to say, well, okay, we're going to master this legend and lore about how you climb the stairway to heaven, and in hopes that we, too, can get one of these lowly jobs in the kingdom of heaven.
Let me ask you this. You talk about the Hadron Collider on your site.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the image. Again, the site is williamhenry.net, for those of you who may have just tuned in. You make an interesting, very interesting paragon between the Hadron Collider and the Mayan 8-ray galaxy symbol.
Yeah, how about that?
That would be very, very exciting information. Would you like to talk about that? And by the way, do you see any link between the Hadron Collider and the possibility that that had something to do with the Norway spiral?
Well, there you go. Good question. Answering in reverse, they looked at the possibility that because the Large Hadron Collider, the energy was being increased, that it might have been responsible for the Norway spiral. I think it was just one of those concurrent events. It's totally synchronistic, but I don't think it's the actual source of the spiral. I do think, though, that when you look at the Large Hadron Collider and in the interviews that I've listened to, for example, Steve Croft was of the 60 Minutes here in the U.S. was interviewing Bob Stanek, one of the physicists at CERN, and talking about the Large Hadron Collider, and Stanek explicitly said that what they're really going for there at CERN is teleportation. And they think they're about 10 to 20 years away from teleportation. So they're really building a teleportation or time travel machine there at CERN. And so when you look at the Norway spiral with the possibility of a time traveling or Stargate traveling messiah coming through such a spiral, it's like, okay, here's another testimony, here's another affirmation that we're on the edge here of ourselves becoming Stargate traveling time travelers. And are you ready? And the Mayans, in my opinion, expressed the exact same idea when they described this serpent rope, or what my friend and colleague John Major Jenkins first described as a wormhole opening from the center of the galaxy. In the Mayan symbolism, they show the galaxy as an eight-spoked wheel, and they show it opening. They show this serpent rope, as they describe it, with their messianic figure surfing upon it. And the question is posed again by John Jenkins: could this symbolism in fact refer to a wormhole opening and a being traveling through this stargate coming from the center of the galaxy to Earth? How amazing is it that at this time, at 2012, suddenly at the apex of our science, the apex of our spiritual consciousness, is this idea of traveling the galaxy or galaxies or interdimensionally through stargates and wormholes. It's another affirmation that we're right in tune with this, that we're right online with it. Well, what I did is just to take a look at the amazing ATLAS detector at CERN, which is the actual device that's going to be searching for what they call the God particle, this elusive or missing, not missing, but elusive subatomic particle. I compared the 8-rate shape of that detector with the 8-spoked wheel of the Mayan Milky Way galaxy image, and what do you know? They're a perfect match.
Yes, they are.
And then all of a sudden, you get these mathematicians, especially the Russians, saying, you know, CERN is nothing but a time travel device. And you just have to wonder, is this in fact a fulfillment of the Mayan prophecy of this serpent rope slash wormhole opening, or this wormhole consciousness opening to begin with, and a time traveling messiah appearing?
Well, I do not think that it was that the Hadron Collider created the wormhole, or the let's call it the spiral. I don't think it's a coincidence either. I think that if we refer back to the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind,
mm-hmm.
and you've got the guys up on the hill going doo 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 doo,
right, right,
doo 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 doo, and then the big gahunas come in with bom 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 bom,
right, right, right. Right.
I would like to compare that very possibly with us little humans here trying to, whatever they're doing at CERN, trying to open a time machine or playing with the God particle, whatever, and then the universe going, oh, and playing that sound for us. Do, 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 do,
yeah.
Do, check this out.
Yeah, check
and
this out.
And there's always spiral
right.
appearing.
Wow, I really like that, Patricia. And one other thing I wanted to add about CERN is that it also, I think, plays into Jewish legend concerning the return of the Messiah. There's, according to Lewis Ginsburg in his book, The Legends of the Jews, that the messianic figure will have an assistant or a partner. And this figure has a to-do list. Go get the Ark of the Covenant. Go get the flask of manna. Go get the Holy Grail. Go get the Rod of Righteousness. Grind the mountains of the Holy Land to powder, which I think was 9/11. Come back to that in a minute. And then ultimately, reveal the light that shone before the first week of creation. Well, that blew me away because when I went to CERN a couple of summers ago and to tour the Large Hadron Collider, I took the elevator down to the Atlas detector, got off the elevator, and here's this sign that says, recreating the conditions just after the Big Bang. Well, it turns out that they're recreating the conditions just after the Big Bang, meaning 100 billionth of a second after the Big Bang. So this is before the first week of creation. So I look at that, recreate the conditions just after the Big Bang, and then go back and reread the Jewish legend that says that this figure will herald the reappearance of the primal light which shone before the week of creation. I'm thinking, this primal light sounds suspiciously like what they're recreating there at CERN, that exact same moment. And I just put a check mark on the to-do list saying, okay, there it is. This is fulfillment of the messianic prophecy. We are doing it, and it may well be that in our extremely limited pea-shooter version of it, that it got the God's attention, and they did come back with the ba-ba-ba, as you're saying.
Exactly. That's what it looks like to me. That's what it feels to me like. Oh, okay, humans. Let us show you how it looks.
Yeah. Because, and then the other thing, I was talking with an aerospace engineer named Mike Barra the other day. He's actually Richard Hoagland's research partner, and he's a spiritual guy. And he is intrigued by the whole serpent rope idea because he thinks it could be some kind of a torsion field, which is something he and Hoagland have been researching for years. And he's like, okay, the serpent rope is the torsion field. We're coming into developing this new torsion field physics and everything. And what he thought is that he was riffing off my Revelation 20:12 Judgment Day take, and that is when you read the book of Revelation, chapter 20, verse 12, Revelation 20:12 is Judgment Day in the Christian Bible. That's the day when we're judged, and
wow.
That's the rapture. It's all of that, all wrapped up into one. And he really was like, wow, you got to be kidding me. Revelation, the book of Revelation, chapter 20, verse 12 is Judgment Day. We are done. No, we're not. But what he thinks is that we could well be in the process of being judged right now by this higher consciousness. And by judged, what we mean is weighed and balanced. Where are you guys at? Just how advanced are you mentally? how advanced are you spiritually, and let's put the heart of humanity on the scale of cosmic order and see where you're at. And if you're ready
to go on.
And how
do you think we fare on that scale?
I think we're close. I think we're close. I think we're very close to being in balance. I really do.
You do?
I do. I think we're very close.
That's good to hear.
I think
and do you
we
think
are,
by that date, that judgment day, we will have be able to tip the scales to the light?
Yes, I do. And I think it's going to be a smaller percentage of us that have to do that. And in order to do that, we have to become Jedi. We have to become stable. We have to become righteous. This doesn't mean we become self-righteous. It just means we live the good way, the God way. We live godly lives. And if there's enough of a percentage of us here living godly lives, we can make everything balance out.
And I'd like to add to that formula that one thing I'm trying to impress upon people is to get out of the fantasy land of their gifts and their past lives and their visions and all of this, and get into humility.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that this is one of the most godly traits that we can bring forward now.
Yes.
The student, the teacher, the humble human being on the path of righteousness, and
that's
however
right.
you define righteousness, but that
yes.
humility, that willingness to be a student of the universe is a very important key.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. And that's what I mean by righteous. And that's why I say it's a word that we've totally abused in our time. But we have to get back to its original meaning of righteousness being, as you're saying, humble, of being the humble servant. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the humble. And that's what we're talking about here. And through our actions, living lives that are of humility, and also making sure our actions are supporting others in their quest to become more righteous and stable.
Yes, indeed. I just love your idea of the Jed and the Jedi. And I'm sure that, you know, Lucas and Spielberg probably knew what they were doing when they used that term.
Oh, I'm pretty sure. You know what's funny too, Patricia, is that in England 10 years ago, and I don't know, they must be taking a census in the UK this year to find out. But anyway, there were a percentage of people declared their religion as Jedi on the census forms. In fact, there were more Jedi.
That's cool.
No, there were more Jedi in England and Wales than Sikhs or Buddhists. It was
no way.
Yeah, no, this is true. It was the fourth largest reported religion in the country, Jedi.
Hope springs eternal in the human breast.
<I'm telling you.
laughs> Listen, tell us a little bit about your new book. This is so exciting. It is called the I can't find it on my
My most
Freedom's
book,
Gate.
Freedom's Gate, right. Yes.
Lost Symbols US Cap of in the US Capitol.
Yes. I started doing.
Can you tell us a little about, you were talking about how George Washington is shown in Ascension?
Yes. Going back
let's talk about that. That's very exciting.
Yeah, going back to the National Treasure days, that Nick Cage movie, I got hooked on all the Freemasonic symbols in that. And during that time, I came upon first awareness of the painting in the dome of the U.S. Capitol, which is, it's called the Apotheosis of George Washington. It shows Washington on a rainbow, surrounded by angelic beings and also surrounded by the five pagan gods the Vatican had spent 1,600 years trying to get rid of, the gods Mercury, the goddess Athena, Ceres, Poseidon. These are all the gods of alchemy. And as I started researching this book, Freedom's Gate, with my co-author, Dr. Mark Gray, who's a chiropractor from Philadelphia, we soon realized that what this painting was one of the greatest alchemical icons ever. It was painted by Constantino Brumidi, who is a Vatican-trained painter who came to the United States under terrible circumstances. The Pope had kept his wife and children hostage back in Rome, and he came to the United States, painted this alchemical icon, and revealed ultimately the true secrets of ascension in this painting. My collaboration with Dr. Gray started when I was in Philadelphia, where he lives, giving a presentation, and I noted that Washington is shown on a rainbow surrounded by these angelic beings, but there's also these 72 stars that surround him. And I said, can't we just call that a stargate? Hasn't Washington gone through the stargate? Now he's over the rainbow living as a deified being. And what I showed, and this is what got Dr. Gray's attention as well as others at the Capitol, was that when you put the image of Washington on the rainbow side by side with the Last Judgment images of the resurrected Jesus, who's also shown sitting on a rainbow, they're interchangeable symbolically. And what Brumidi is essentially saying is that, yeah, Washington has ascended, he's resurrected, and he's also now a Christ-like being. Well, I took that one step further and showed that, in fact, the Christian resurrection imagery of Jesus on the rainbow actually comes from Tibet, where they show their lamas who have achieved the ultimate rapture in what they call the rainbow body. They've achieved the great perfection. They've shifted the vibration of their body into such a state that now they've manifested as five-colored rainbow light. And they are shown either surrounded by this rainbow light or within a rainbow. And so when you've got Jesus on the rainbow, side by side with the Tibetan rainbow body imagery, it too is interchangeable. And it's showing us that what we have here in the dome of the U.S. Capitol is this alchemical icon that teaches us how to achieve ascension. It's all about alchemy. It's all about using stellar energy. It's all about Stargate consciousness.
Right, but why is that related to a political figure?
That's a very good question. There were other apotheosis images of Washington made immediately after his death. Brumidi's painting in the Capitol was painted in 1865, but immediately upon Washington's death, he started seeing images of Washington being lifted into the heavens on a beam of light going right through the sun. This is the Freemasonic...
Well, here's a suggestion I'd like to make.
Sure.
Maybe we're being told that the essence of democracy in its purest form, or what he represents, will prevail upon the New World Order.
Well, let me tell you this in that light then, because that's kind of where we ultimately took this. When you read the Tibetan literature about the rainbow body and this ability we all have to spin ourselves into this vortex of energy, a stargate, that the Tibetans teach us that this rainbow body teaching does not come from Earth. It's taught in 13 star systems in addition to our own. When you go into the U.S. Capitol and look up at Washington, the guides will tell you that the 13 maidens with stars on their heads that surround Washington symbolize the 13 colonies. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. No, it doesn't. This is a heavenly scene. What if instead those 13 star maidens represent the other 13 star systems in which this enlightenment teaching is taught? Wouldn't that suggest that Earth then is part of a federation, if you will, of star systems where this rainbow body teaching is taught? And shouldn't we start reaching out to these star systems? And are there beings coming and going from these star systems? You can probably help me with this, Patricia. I mean, about as far as I get, the Tibetans don't tell us what the 13 star systems are, but we can pretty well figure it's got to have something to do with Orion, with Sirius, the Pleiades, Arcturus, Cygnus. There's five. There's got to be eight others that are chronicled somewhere, but I haven't been able to find them yet.
And don't forget that there are 13 crystal skulls.
Oh, and 13 crystal skulls. Right. Thank you.
So, well, 13 is a number that we're going to have a whole other show about, because we're already out of time, and we've just opened up a whole beautiful, I don't want to say kettle of worms, but it's a beautiful Pandora's box of
a whole can of
potential discussion. So you have to come back.
Okay.
All right, because we're just getting rolling here. Oh, man, I hate to have to wind up such an exciting discussion, but I need to give William time to tell us. You're going to be in London. You're doing a talk there. Would you like to give us some more information for people that can find out more about what you're up to?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, you can go to my website, williamhenry.net. And when you go there, you'll see information about my DVD presentations and also about my upcoming event in London, which I call The Journey Home, Stargates Ascension in 2012. I'll be talking a lot about some of the things Patricia and I just talked about. It's at the Sloane Club in Chelsea, the Chelsea area of London, on Friday, April 30th. It'll be about a 2.5-hour presentation. And if you're in the area, please come see us.
I wish I was going to be there, but I'm not tempting those planes right now.
I know.
But I'm waiting for you in Rome, William. We're going to have at least lunch and wine and a great time, and we'll have no time restrictions so we can talk until we're exhausted.
Can't wait. That's going to be wonderful, Patricia.
I can't
Thank
wait
you so
either.
Much.
And I want to leave you with this thought of the conversation we were just having about Washington and the resurrection and all of this information, and Glenn Beck's face popped into my head, and I was thinking, whoa, that would be an interesting conversation, you and Glenn Beck.
I've sent him books, I've tried to contact him. It's like, Glenn, we can fix this.
I love it. On that note, I'm going to have to say goodnight. But that is something that we're going to have to work on, because the guy really needs to talk to you.
Yeah, we can fix this, Glenn. It's okay. It's all right.
I love it. Thank you so much. I've been talking with William Henry. I love him. He calls himself an investigative mythologist, and that's a very limited description of the wisdom and the reach of this man. Great author, great spiritualist, and a truly kindred spirit. Thank you so much, William. I'm going to have you back on. And all of you, it's already time to go. So this is Patricia Corey. Sorry I haven't been with you these weeks. Thank you for tuning back in. And we're full steam ahead now, back on the power zone. So I'm signing out. This is Beyond the Matrix, the program that dares you to think outside the box of convention. And oh, by the way, the book Beyond the Matrix, Daring Conversations with the Brilliant Minds of Our Times, is already out on pre-sale on Amazon.com and will be available on May 25th, I think. So you want to grab that. Really good, really good information. Thanks, everybody. Be with me next week. Be powerful. Be positive. Be clear. Much love. Ciao, ciao.